Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Now, more than ever, learning about the world has become a survival skill for an informed citizenry. The South Dakota World Affairs Council aims to foster in-depth conversations about the most pressing topics of our day. You can learn about the future of Korea at a panel discussion this Wednesday in Brookings. And here with a preview of the talk is one of those panelists. Jenna Gibson is the Director of Communications at Korea Economic Institute of America. She joins us now on the phone. Jenna Gibson, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Really looking forward to the talk.
Tell me a little bit about the Korea Economic Institute of America first, please.
Sure. So we are a research institute. We're located in Washington, D.C., and obviously, you can tell by the name, we're really focused on Korea. One of our main topics is economics, you know, particularly trade between the U.S. and Korea. But of course, there's a lot of important things going on, especially right now. So we do a lot of research with security, North Korea, as well as social issues related to U.S. and South Korea.
What is trade like now between the Republic of Korea and America, especially when we talk about agricultural trade, which might apply to South Dakotans?
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's a really big thing that we've been talking about lately, because particularly when it comes to beef and pork, we are seeing a huge increase in trade, in exports of beef, pork, other agricultural products, especially fruit, going to South Korea. And that's largely thanks to the free trade agreement that went into effect in 2012. So that's something we're talking about a lot. I know up until last year, South Korea imported most of its beef from Australia. But thanks to those dropping tariffs, they're actually now exporting the most beef from the United States. So that's a big market for American farmers.
Has that changed, or that conversation changed with the new presidential administration?
It has, yes. So that's one thing that the current administration, the Trump administration, is really looking at. And a lot of the farm associations are really worried about this because they have seen such an increase of selling their products to Korea. But the administration is looking at the CORUS, the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, and they're threatening to even withdraw from it. So that's something that especially farmers are looking at very closely.
Let's talk a little bit about you've spent time in Korea. You study it. I think people sometimes underestimate the connection between South Korea and America. What can you say about really how closely tied we are as nations?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. And that's something that I usually bring up when we do these events, such as Future of Korea, and something that I'll be talking about at this event. I like to ask people in the room to raise their hand if they have a Samsung phone in their pocket or a Samsung TV in their home, or an LG washing machine. Do they drive a Hyundai car? You know, all those things are Korean products, and you know, everybody has a connection to those products. And then I ask people, how many of you have met someone who's Korean-American? That's a huge population, and it's a very deep tie between our countries as well. So I think you're right, people do underestimate it, but if you think about it, we do have a huge tie on a day-to-day basis with Korean, you know, trade and with Korean people. And then, of course, we get into the security side. The North Korean threat is a really huge issue right now, and it's a growing issue. And South Korea is our security ally. You know, we have troops based in South Korea, as well as Japan. They're another ally. So I think that it is something that's really a key tie between our two countries and, you know, something that people should be aware about.
My second car was a Hyundai, and all the instructions were in Korean still. If you bought them early...
Yeah,
and it was a good little car too. So
yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that security issue. And is South Koreans are not, you know, it's not new for them to
right.
sort of you know see the saber rattling from the North. Certainly, are they used to it? Does this feel like? Are you seeing evidence in the markets, for example, that this feels different to South Korean manufacturers and South Korean citizens?
Yeah, I think that it's true that this is something that they've lived with for 60 to 70 years now, and people have really gotten used to it. They've kind of learned to ignore the, you know, rhetoric, the crazy things that the North Korean government tends to say. I'll give you an example from my experience. I was living in South Korea in 2011 when Kim Jong-il, the previous ruler of North Korea, died. Mm-hmm. And so people were really scared at that time. American people, you know, I had my mom calling me, you know, are you in a bunker somewhere? You know, because
right.
it's just an uncertain time, right? So I asked my coworkers, I turned to them and I said, do we need to do something? Are you worried? And they just said, oh yeah, I guess I heard he died. Like, keep doing your work. So they were not worried at all. And I would say that's generally the feeling that I got when I was living there and since I've been working on this issue. I would say this is a little bit different, and only because they're not really sure how to take the comments coming from the White House.
Right.
So the South Koreans are very used to comments coming from Pyongyang. They're used to the way the North Koreans operate, and they know they're not going to cross that red line. But they're really not sure what Trump is going to do. So I think that is a big concern, and it is a growing concern. So that's something that the South Korean president is, you know, trying to reach out as much as possible. They're really, you know, focused on this. So I'm not worried in an immediate sense, but I know that it's a little bit more worry than it has been in the past.
Some of the criticism coming from the White House, or some of the rhetoric that is raising eyebrows, is the notion that South Korea is not doing enough in the partnership. How do people respond to that that notion?
Right. I think there's a lot of misconceptions, unfortunately. So, for example, especially during the election and even since then, President Trump, or, you know, then candidate Trump was saying that South Korea doesn't pay enough for the cost of the troops. They pay 50% of the cost. And he kind of had implied that it wasn't enough. And I mean, they pay 50% of the cost. We pay 50% of the cost. They're our ally, our partner. It's for me, it seems like we have an equal partnership there. So I think correcting some of those misconceptions is helpful. And then also, when it comes to the fact that this is a very dangerous situation, this is not really the time to be questioning those kinds of partnerships, because we do have such a deep and a longstanding, we've had this alliance since the end of the Korean War. It's been 60, 70 years. This is a longstanding partnership we have with South Korea and with Japan, of course. Can't forget about them. So right. This is really not the time to be questioning those friendships and those partnerships, in my opinion.
When we talk about the future of Korea, we're also talking about, you know, going back to your comment about the Korean War, we talk about the aging and, you know, the death of elders who remember that time and mm-hmm. see America in a certain way, and a new generation coming up. When you look at the future of Korea, what does that new generation seem to be pushing for?
That's a really good question. I think one of the main things, because South Korea actually does have quite a high opinion of Americans. If you do public opinion polls, it's in the mid to high 80s of people who approve of the United States and think that we have a good partnership. So I'm not so worried on that side. But one thing that's interesting is that the generation gap in terms of how they view North Korea is very stark. So the older generation, the ones who are in their 70s, 80s, who won't be around much longer, unfortunately, really view the two Koreas as one country that's artificially divided, versus if someone's in their 20s or 30s, that's all they've grown up with. They see it more as an enemy, and they see it more as a burden if there were to be a collapse or a unification. Mm. There's a very big concern that South Koreans will have to pay to take care of these very poor and destitute people. And that's a big concern for the younger generation, especially considering that South Korea has a lot of problems with unemployment and youth unemployment. So they're more focused on that issue. Mm-hmm. So I'm not so much worried in terms of the way that people view Americans, but in the way that they approach the North Korea security issue and maybe not wanting to have a unification that would have a lot of costs for the South Korean people.
And they're not going to be reunited with their long-lost sister either.
Right.
The connections, the family connections of separation at
lost.
The time
yeah.
is lost. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
How about this notion? I don't know how much you want to talk about security, but in America, a lot of conversation is happening around, you know, who does President Trump surround himself in this interaction with Kim Jong-un and North Korea? And you have John Kelly and James Mattis and H.R. McMaster. Mm-hmm. You have these military, you know, generals with strong military background. Do you think that helps, you know, sort of soothe some of those fears that these people are more inclined to use diplomacy than the president? Or do you think it has the opposite effect where people in Korea see them as, you know, military generals? And how does that, what are the optics of that in South Korea?
Yeah, that's another really good question. I think it really does help. And I'll give you one example. General Mattis, and I believe this is during his confirmation hearing, he said something along the lines of, you know, the less we rely on diplomats, the more guns I'm going to have to buy. And so he was very much focused on, let's do diplomacy first. I don't want to have to use those guns. That was his approach. And so I think it's a similar case for the other generals that the president has surrounded himself with. They are very much, we'll do what has to be done. Everything's on the table. We're not going to, you know, allow American lives to be threatened, but I don't want to have to get to that point. So I think that they are very practical and reserved and very focused on getting a diplomatic solution, because that's best for everybody. Nobody wants a second Korean War. It would be horrible. So, and they understand that. So I think that's really positive. The one thing that is a little bit worrisome, though, is those middle levels. So, for example, we don't have an ambassador to South Korea right now. We haven't even, put forward a name yet. So that's one thing that's of concern to at least the South Korean government. They don't have that intermediary person that they can go to have these day-to-day conversations. So that's something that needs to, you know, speed up a little bit.
Is that unusual? Is the Trump administration behind in that, or is it not uncommon to have a delay?
It depends. It's getting quite long. I think it's, you know, sometimes it takes longer than others, but it's been, you know, 9 months now. So, and considering that this is a very urgent, intense situation, it probably should be a priority to get at least the South Korean ambassador at the moment. You know, some of the lower level State Department and Defense Department people who are also not in place, that, you know, if it takes a little bit longer, it's not as big of a deal. But a South Korean ambassador seems like a big priority, right, at least to me.
Do they feel the weight of a nuclear threat like we saw in Guam, or, you know, that Americans are processing? Do they care if Kim Jong-un has a nuclear weapon?
Oh, that's hard to say, because I think they care in the sense that it's not a positive thing in any, you know, sense of the word. But at the same time, an average South Korean person don't actually think that he would be suicidal enough to use it. So I think that they, as opposed to the United States, where this is a very new threat for us, I mean, they've been developing this weapon, but they've only just gotten to the cusp of being able to actually hit the United States. So this is a very new thing within the last year or so for an American audience. But a South Korean audience, I think they have realized that as this continues to develop, it's dangerous. It's not good, and we need to work on it. We need to have those possible diplomatic negotiations, those kinds of things. But I think that they've become desensitized in a way that they're not freaking out on a day-to-day basis, if that makes sense.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the upcoming panel discussion about the future of Korea. I think I said it's on Wednesday. It's actually Thursday. That's Wednesday. What? You tell me. I have the 19th, Thursday the 19th.
Yeah.
Okay. At 4:00, that's at the Bailey Rotunda at SDSU. What else? Who else is on the panel with you, and what do you anticipate having for a conversation that people can look forward to?
Sure. So we have a really great mix of people. As you mentioned, I'll be there. And then the vice president of the Korea Economic Institute will be there. And he was actually a former diplomat, U.S. diplomat, for 38 years. So he's retired from the State Department, and then now he's working for us at KEI. So he's going to bring that kind of State Department diplomatic viewpoint to the discussion. And then we also have a representative, the Economic Affairs Minister from the Korean Embassy, so the South Korean Embassy to the United States in Washington, D.C. He's going to be there, and he's going to talk a lot more about this trade relationship that we've discussed a little bit. He's an expert in that. So he's going to bring some of the economic expertise. We're going to have our diplomatic expertise, and then I'll try to bring some of the in-between stuff as well. So that's the discussion that we're planning on having, and we're also really interested to hear what questions people have. I think we'll present a little bit, you know, give some people some background, but we really want to know what people are interested in. And so have a discussion and talk a lot about the kinds of issues that we're talking about right now.
Let's close with your personal experience in Korea. Tell me what captivated you to the point that you wanted to spend a career really working with this culture, this country, this language?
Yeah, so I actually kind of stumbled upon Korea. I was graduating from college, and I didn't study abroad, so I had regrets about that and decided to move to Korea almost as an adventure, something I didn't really know anything about. Mm-hmm. And then when I arrived, I was through a State Department program, the Fulbright program, and they placed me at a middle school in a rural town as an English teacher. And it was just the most amazing experience. And I was supposed to leave after a year, and I decided to stay a second year and stay at that school. So it's hard to put a finger on, but just, the people are so warm, welcoming. It's an amazingly beautiful country, amazing food. And so I just had such an amazing time there that I decided, I could do some more of this. So when I came back to the States, I went and got my master's degree and focused on Asian international relations and security policy. And so that's kind of how that happened. But one thing about Korea, for better or worse, is everything changes on a day-to-day basis. So there's always something new to talk about. Mm. There's so, it's very dynamic. And so that's what I really love about working on Korea issues.
Jenna Gibson is the Director of Communications at the Korea Economic Institute of America. She's coming to SDSU for a panel discussion. That's on Thursday, October 19th at SDSU in Brookings. Jenna Gibson, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.